That's the Juju Orchestra with its very favorite song of mine, a very favorite tune of mine, This Is Not a Tango. It's from their 2007 album, Bossa Nova Is Not a Crime. And I do agree. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we'll pick up from where we left off with each other just yesterday. Lots and lots happening. It's going at a feverish pace. And as you know, it's no way to make sense of who's telling the truth, or if there is such a thing in the middle of all of this as the truth. But we'll give it a shot. I want to talk about yesterday. A very interesting thing happened. We had the three members of the Congressional Black Caucus basically making a very strident comment that they felt like they were put at the back of the bus, and that was in reference to the fact that they were on a panel, the last panel, to discuss the confirmation, or the nomination and confirmation, of Senator Jeff Sessions, who, as you know, has been nominated by President-elect Donald Trump to be the next U.S. Attorney General. Well, they found themselves on the very last panel, and they were not happy about it. They included Representative Cedric Richmond, a congressman from Louisiana, who also is chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus, which represents 49 members of Congress. And that includes, he said, 78 million people and 17 million African Americans in specific, the Congressional Black Caucus, hence. It also included civil rights icon John Lewis, and it included John Lewis from Georgia, and it included Cory Booker, seen as a rising star within the Democratic Party, a U.S. senator, a junior U.S. senator from New Jersey. Now, I'm talking about this, as you will see in a minute, we're talking about this being a very important nomination, and the intention, at least by these three gentlemen, was to voice their concerns and hoping, of course, that it would be taken seriously by the committee, the Senate Judicial Committee. And so they had their remarks prepared. On the panel on which they sat, there were three other African Americans, and they were all people who knew and had worked with Senator Sessions, and they all were quite positive and laudatory in their remarks about Sessions. But I want to bring this to your attention. I called it today, I just gave it a title off the top of my head, How Not to Testify. Now, I set the scenario up. This is a very, very major appointment. It is particularly contentious because Senator Sessions has had a dodgy history, for lack of a better term, on racial matters. And in his involvement in litigating and in some cases adjudicating racially tinged matters. He was denied a judgeship, as a matter of fact, for exactly this reason, and because the criticisms of him on this count weighed against him. So here again, he appears, and this time, as a sitting U.S. senator. Hopefully, he thinks he will be a former senator. He would then be the U.S. Attorney General, which is the highest law enforcement office in the land. So I was very, very keen to hear what the congressman and the U.S. senator were going to say. And I tell you, well, you'll hear for yourself. This is, you're going to hear two clips. In fact, you're going to hear the testimony first of John Lewis. And as I said, he is an icon of the civil rights movement. He marched with Martin Luther King. He has a long and documented history of advocating for civil rights, not just for African Americans, but for all people. But this is what he said.
Hear from Congressman John Lewis.
Chairman Grassley, Senator Leahy, and members of the committee, thank you for inviting me to testify today. Millions of Americans are encouraged by our country's efforts to create a more inclusive democracy during the last 50 years of what some of us call the beloved community, a community at peace with itself. They are not a minority. A clear majority of Americans said they want this to be a fair, just, and open nation. They are afraid that this country is headed in the wrong direction. They're concerned that some leaders reject decades of progress and want to return to the dark past when the power of law was used to deny the freedoms protected by the Constitution. The Bill of Rights and its amendments, these are the voices I represent today. We can pretend that the law is blind. We can pretend that it is evil-handed. But if we are honest with ourselves, we know that we are called upon daily by the people we represent to help them deal with unfairness in how the law is written and enforced. Those who are committed to equal justice in our society wonder whether Senator Sessions' call for law and order would mean today what it meant in Alabama when I was coming up back then. The rule of law was used to violate the human and civil rights of the poor, the dispossessed people of color. I was born in rural Alabama, not very far from where Senator Sessions was raised. There was no way to escape or deny the chokehold of discrimination and racial hate that surrounded us. I saw the signs that said white waiting, colored waiting. I saw the signs that said white men, white women, colored women. I tasted the bitter fruits of segregation and racial discrimination. Segregation was the law of the land that ordered our society in the Deep South. Any black person who did not cross the street when a white person was walking down the same sidewalk, who did not move to the back of the bus, who drank from a white water fountain, who looked a white person directly in the eyes, could be arrested and taken to jail. The forces of law and order in Alabama were so strong that to take a stand against this injustice, we had to be willing to sacrifice our lives for our cause. Often, the only way we could demonstrate that a law on the books violated a higher law was by challenging that law, by putting our bodies on the line and showing the world the unholy price we had to pay for dignity and respect. It took massive well-organized, nonviolent dissent for the Voting Rights Act to become law. It required criticism of this great nation and its laws to move toward a greater sense of equality in America. We had to sit in. We had to stand in. We had to march. And that's why more than 50 years ago, a group of unarmed citizens, black and white, gathered on March 7, 1965, in an orderly, peaceful, nonviolent fashion to walk from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama, to dramatize to the nation and to the world that we wanted to register to vote, wanted to become participants in the democratic process. We were beaten, tear gas, left bloody, some of us unconscious. Some of us had concussions. Some of us almost died on that bridge. But the Congress responded. President Lyndon Johnson responded. And the Congress passed the Voting Rights Act. And it was signed into law on August 6, 1965. We have come a distance. We have made progress. But we're not there yet. There are forces that want to take us back to another place. We don't want to go back. We want to go forward. As the late A. Philip Randolph, who was the dean of the March on Washington in 1963, often said, maybe our forefathers and our foremothers all came to this great land in different ships, but we're all in the same boat now. It doesn't matter how Senator Sessions may smile, how friendly he may be, how he may speak to you, but we need someone who's going to stand up, speak up, and speak out for the people that need help, for people being discriminated against. And it doesn't matter whether they're black or white, Latino, Asian American, or Native American, whether they're straight or gay, Muslim, Christian, or Jews. We all live in the same house, the American house. We need someone as Attorney General who's going to look out for all of us and not just for some of us. I ran out of time. Thank you for giving me a chance to testify.
Thank you, Congressman Lewis.
That was John Lewis, a congressman from Georgia, and as I said, a civil rights icon. We'll come back to him after we hear this from Cory Booker, the junior U.S. Senator from New Jersey. Here's what he had to say.
Thank you, Chairman Grassley. I want to thank Senator Leahy as well as the distinguished members of this committee. I know it is exceptional for a senator to testify against another senator nominated for a cabinet position, and I appreciate the opportunity you've given me today. I've worked closely with many of you on this panel on both sides of the dais on matters related to criminal justice reform, and you know just how deeply motivated I am by the many issues our next Attorney General will heavily influence, especially the crisis of mass incarceration. I know that some of my many colleagues are unhappy that I am breaking with Senate tradition to testify on the nomination of one of my colleagues, but I believe, like perhaps all of my colleagues in the Senate, that in the choice between standing with Senate norms or standing up for what my conscience tells me is best for our country, I will always choose conscience and country. While Senator Sessions and I have consistently disagreed on the issues, he and I have always exercised a collegiality and a mutual respect between us. Perhaps the best example of this is the legislation we co-sponsored to award the Congressional Gold Medal to those foot soldiers who marched at Selma. One of the foot soldiers is sitting next to me now. This was a blessing and an honor to me because in 2015, a retired judge who was white told me that it was those brave marchers on the Edmund Pettus Bridge who inspired him as a young lawyer in the 1960s to seek justice for all in New Jersey and begin representing black families looking to integrate white neighborhoods, black families who were turned away and denied housing. One of those families was mine. I am literally sitting here because of people, marchers in Alabama, and volunteer lawyers in New Jersey, who saw it as their affirmative duty to pursue justice, to fight discrimination, to stand up for those who are marginalized. But the march for justice in our country still continues. It is still urgent. I know also, though, of the urgency for law and order. I imagine that no sitting senator has lived in the last 20 years in higher crime neighborhoods than I have. I have seen unimaginable violence on American streets. I know the tremendous courage of law enforcement officers who put their lives on the line every single day to fight crime in America. I want an attorney general who is committed to supporting law enforcement and securing law and order, but that is not enough. America was founded heralding not law and order, but justice for all. And critical to that is equal justice under the law. Law and order without justice is unobtainable. They are inextricably tied together. If there is no justice, there is no peace. The Alabama state troopers on the Edmund Pettus Bridge were seeking law and order. The marchers were seeking justice and ultimately a greater peace. One of the victories of the modern civil rights movement was the 1957 Civil Rights Act, which in effect made the Attorney General not only the chief law enforcement officer of the United States, but also vested in that office the responsibility to pursue civil rights and equal protection for all of America. Senator Sessions has not demonstrated a commitment to a central requisite of the job, to aggressively pursue the congressional mandate of civil rights, equal rights, and justice for all of our citizens. In fact, at numerous times in his career, he has demonstrated a hostility towards these convictions and has worked to frustrate attempts to advance these ideals. If confirmed, Senator Sessions will be required to pursue justice for women, but his record indicates that he won't. He will be expected to defend the equal rights of gay and lesbian and transgender Americans, but his record indicates that he won't. He will be expected to defend voting rights, but his record indicates that he won't. He will be expected to defend the rights of immigrants and affirm their human dignity, but the record indicates that he won't. His record indicates that as Attorney General, he would object to the growing national bipartisan movement towards criminal justice reform. His record indicates that we cannot count on him to support state and national efforts towards bringing justice to the justice system and people on both sides of the aisle who readily admit that the justice system as it stands now is biased against the poor, against drug addicted, against mentally ill, and against people of color. His record indicates that at a time that even the FBI director is speaking out against implicit racial bias in policing and the urgent need to address it, at a time when the last two attorney generals have taken steps to fix our broken criminal justice system, at a time when the Justice Department he would lead has uncovered systemic abuses in police departments all over the United States, including Ferguson, including Newark, Senator Sessions would not continue to lead this urgently needed change. The next Attorney General must bring hope and healing to this country. And this demands a more courageous empathy than Senator Sessions' record demonstrates. It demands an understanding that patriotism is love of country, and love of country demands that we love all of our citizens, even the most marginalized, the most disadvantaged, the most degraded, and the most unfortunate. Challenges of race in America cannot be addressed if we refuse to confront them. Persistent biases cannot be defended unless we combat them. The arc of the moral universe does not just naturally curve towards justice. We must bend it. If one is to be attorney general, they must be willing to continue the hallowed tradition in our country of fighting for justice for all, for equal justice, for civil rights. America needs an attorney general who is resolute and determined to bend the arc. Senator Sessions' record does not speak to that desire, intention, or will. With all that is at stake in our nation now, with an urgent need for healing and for love, I pray that my colleagues will join me in opposing his nomination. Mr. Chairman, my time is over. I'd like to submit the rest of my testimony to the record. I'd like to again thank you for your opportunity to testify. And finally, I'd like to acknowledge, which was not done, that sitting behind me are proud members of the United States Congress and the Congressional Black Caucus.
Okay. So what am I having trouble with? Can you guess? In hearing these two particular members of Congress, John Lewis, a congressman from Georgia, and as I said, an icon of the civil rights movement, and Cory Booker, the junior senator from New Jersey. What is it that I'm missing? Why am I so troubled by these speeches? Please advise me, because I need to know. If you can tell me what it is that about these speeches that made me come close to cussing all day today. You tell me. Let's see if you get it. 888-874-4888. What is it about these two speeches that has me tied up in a knot? Can you guess? Can you figure it out? Give me a call. Let's see. Let's see if you get it. We'll take this break and come back to see whether you get it. We just heard two speeches. It sounded very good. But I am very distressed. Why are these speeches so distressing? This is media literacy in a way, but it also is plain old-fashioned politics. We'll take this break, come back, and see whether you could solve this great dilemma for me. Why is it that I am so perturbed? I know that in general in life, people do say I'm a bit perturbed. but maybe the word distressed is a better word for that. We'll take this break, come back to your calls at 888-874-4888. Tell me what is wrong with these speeches. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. We've just shared the testimony of two members of Congress, John Lewis, an icon of the civil rights movement from Georgia. This is in connection with the testimony before the Senate Judicial Committee, hearing testimony with regard to the nomination, well, it is a nomination, but the confirmation of Senator Jeff Sessions. And we also heard from Cory Booker. Well, we have somebody. Let's start off with a Georgian. Gerald from Georgia. Why am I so upset?
I can tell you why I'm upset.
Why are you upset?
John Lewis could have supported the candidate that would have made a better difference in these type of affairs. But he chose to put his support, he and Cory Booker, wholeheartedly, from the bottom of his soul, behind someone who has a record of being a murderer or warmonger, liar, helped put a lot of black people in jail with their policies. He supported that person wholeheartedly.
Let's talk about the speech itself, and the content of the speech itself. What about it made me so distressed? Could you guess?
Well, I don't know. Honestly, I can't answer that. You know, I can just say it. He's just talking about stuff. He sounded like he was posturing to me a lot about what he had to go through and people in his era, which is real, you know. But what has he done since then? I'm sure he's done a lot for the community in other ways, but he could have done more if he had supported someone, in my opinion, like Bernie Sanders. But he did everything in his power with the rest of them to push that person out of the way to get another a crook in office. So now he got Donald Trump. The content of his speech was the same old, you know. It didn't mean anything to me, neither one of them. You know,
Nothing to you. All right. Well, you got us started. You got us started, Gerald. And I thank you for calling in from Georgia. Thanks so much for contributing today. From New York, Chris, you're on the air. What is this? What is it that I'm perturbed about, do you think?
Good afternoon, Utrece. You pushed a button as I was sitting here, and I would like to offer my I don't know the word exactly right now, but I will use an analogy that may not seem 100% perfect, but I think the principle is very similar. I had the same reaction when though I didn't watch the Golden Globes. I had the same reaction when I heard Meryl Streep, and I saw the little snippet of her.
But we're not talking about Meryl Streep.
No, we're talking
about two members of Congress, one a senator, one a congressman, and they just made a speech before the Judicial Committee, and they are considering, or their statements and their testimony is specifically related to the confirmation of Senator Jeff Sessions. You heard what they had to say.
Excuse me. Well, I'll tell you.
I'm sharing with you that it is distressing in a way.
I totally understand you. That's why I called.
I would say something like that.
I'll tell you why it was distressing for me as well. I think the emotion is the same, which is why I was calling. If you would just give me a moment, I'll try to explain. I won't be very too wordy about it.
Give me the short version. Because we have a ton of people in queue.
Okay. The commentaries that these people get up and make, okay, I know they're not the same. We're talking about a politician and a very successful actress. But when I watched her, being an actor, okay, to use that in quotes.
Oh, we're not talking about Meryl. We're beyond Meryl.
She used a platform, okay? She used a platform to make a political statement, which in and of itself,
You're still on Meryl Streep. I think
her motivation was very similar to what you are feeling, what these two gentlemen, well, I think the previous caller said it is. I thought it was a lot of posturing myself as well. But the motivation was the same within the context of their comfortable bubble. Whatever it is for each of these people, including Meryl Streep, they, you know, took the platform as if they were.
You're talking about Meryl Streep. I don't want to hear about Meryl Streep. We're talking about this particular, the very specific speeches that I just shared with you. And I said that it distressed me.
Well, I think it's just sheer hypocrisy. I don't know the word that you're looking for, but I think it's...
I'm just trying to say it's not that I'm looking for any particular word. I'm looking for a particular response to the speech, whether it hit you the same way it hit me. Okay. Well, thanks. Thanks for calling in today. Yeah. Kofi from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Yeah. John Lewis is a joke. Or Booker is trying to be a man. That's all.
No, well, you have to. I know you're calling from a Cory Booker country, but
what is that?
I said I know you're calling from Cory Booker country, right? New Jersey. So
yeah.
You heard what he had to say.
Yeah.
What about this? The tone of the speech and the content of the speech at this particular juncture. This is testimony related
He wasn't forceful enough, and there's a whole lot more about Sessions that you could have brought up, but that he didn't bring up.
Okay. It wasn't forceful enough?
Nope.
Okay. Well, thank you. Willie.
All right, thank you.
From Brooklyn, you're on the air.
My beloved.
Hello.
How are you, my beloved? How are you?
I'm okay. I'm hanging in.
I'm so happy to hear from you. I'm telling you, you're such a champion. You know, there are people who sit around the other day, you know, they're radiant, waiting for you to get on. And I found myself, I said, where is it? I began to get upset because I'm like, where's he at? They played a tape, an old tape. And I said, you know, I was being very selfish on my part because, you know, you have to other things to do. Me, you know, like a doctor and stuff like that. I'm saying, we don't even think about that. All we want to know is.
We're talking about the speech today, the speeches that you just listened to.
Well, I really didn't listen to much of it. I got bits and parts. But from what I've heard, the little bit I've heard, well, you know, these guys, they sound like they're a bunch of beggars. You know, they're talking and pleading and that kind of stuff. I really don't want to hear that kind of thing. And they're not talking about enforcing the law, someone that will enforce the law, that's all. And I'm not hearing that. I'm not thinking about what their passions are, what their beliefs are. I'm not interested in that kind of thing. You will either enforce the law or you're not. Simple. And then we'll take it from there. That's all.
Okay.
That's what I heard.
Well, that is succinct. Enough. Thanks, Willie. Thanks so much. Great to hear from you today. From Montreal, Randolph, what did you hear?
Hello, Utrecht. The thing that it seems to me that what these people are saying, that this man is a donkey. After 52 years, a stubborn donkey, you'll still have to remind him that respect, that what the law said 52 years ago, they still have to fight for the very same things. Nothing has changed in this gentleman's ideas. He still doesn't understand. That's what I think they're saying. What you're thinking?
Well, I will share it in a minute. I just want to take a couple more calls to see what people are thinking out there. Ali from New York, professor, what are you thinking? Why is this so distressing to me?
Well, I'm going to tell you what was distressing to me, to hear Cory Booker talking about this bill that he has sponsored with this guy and how friendly the two of them had been. And then it was almost like he was giving a recommendation about this man because he's very polite. He's very good. He's so polite that we have sponsored a bill together and we have respect for each other. So if you hear somebody talking about somebody like that, what do you think? What you will think?
Well, believe it or not, You're right on the subject. There's no sense of a fight coming from them at all.
No. As a matter of fact, if you hear both of them, I thought when people, the media, got this big thing about this senator going against another senator ever. I mean, this was like the biggest thing. And I have to tell you, Utrecht, I was never expecting anything. And Cory Booker, even though he's a black man, when he talks about himself, he always had talked about that he's one of these guys who went to the Ivy League school, and he is different. And he's
different. He told today that, you know, he grew up in very crime-ridden neighborhoods and, you know, practically, you know, a very poor family and all of that stuff. That's what he kind of said today. But well, you are right on the money with Cory Booker. You got the points. You got the points. You came closest so far. But there's still more to add to it. And I just want to go through a couple more calls, and then I'll kind of point it out. Okay? But thanks so much for calling. That's why you are the professor, Allie. Veronica from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi, good day. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Okay. I was thinking I was on the comedy hour or something because Cory Booker, I said the corruption, and he's all out for himself and his money. He reminds me of a lot of people who have been bullied, and they go into law enforcement, and it's like, let me just get my paycheck and get the hell out of Dodge. And I said to myself, I said, how could it be Cory Booker? He has no ethics. He cares not about the people. He is like a lot of people in Congress. They have forgotten what they went into the business for, or they never intended to serve the people. Definitely not people that look like him. And I believe he's a paid person by the Clinton administration for him to even arrive at where he is at present day. He has never served the people, as far as I've known.
But what in his speech triggered this opinion in your head?
Oh, I'm very sorry. This is just on what I know of Cory Booker and being
okay.
A person.
You're just
from the
offloading
United African
then.
Movement.
You're just offloading
I'm from the United African
your emotion.
Movement. I know. I don't know
right.
anything that he's done for people of color. That's the bottom line.
All right. Well, thank you. We've gotten a pretty good sample of people and what they're thinking. And here is why we listen to tapes, because as I said, when you listen to people talk, they're talking at several different levels. And you have to listen to decipher how many levels are there. Like in any conversation, there are two agendas going at any time with a conversation, what you have to say and what the other person has to say. So there are two levels right there. Now, this is an interesting scenario. This is not your ordinary conversation. This is testimony. And it is solicited and being offered by members of Congress. So these are not ordinary conversations that we're listening to here. This is testimony. And it concerns the appointment of the highest officer of the law in the country, who has been nominated by President-elect Donald Trump. So this is serious business. You would imagine, in the case I'm talking now of John Lewis, icon that he is of the civil rights movement, and I don't deny him that at all. Great respect. But he was so off target here, it's not even funny. This was not meant to be a lesson in civil rights. When you come before a committee to testify, you ought to be prepared. Are you for or are you against? We didn't know. We didn't hear that. Is he for the appointment or is he going to be voting against it? Never said it. And we heard his entire speech so far. He never made it clear whether, as the civil rights icon, whether he, because that's some influence, and I imagine that's why he was given a privileged position to speak ostensibly in behalf of the African-American legislators. On this particular occasion, one would expect some serious thunder coming from this man. Either way, if you're supporting, let's hear why. And if you're not supporting, let's hear why, but make it clear. He did not make it clear. Instead, we got the scenic tour of the civil rights struggles, which means it was a total misuse of both opportunity and time. The second thing I want to point out with John Lewis's testimony, and it really kind of galls me in a way, because it also applies to Cory Booker and to many African-American legislators. There is a hesitancy, and in some cases, a downright refusal to indicate that they're speaking for the African-American community specifically. They always have to be universal about it. We may have come over in different ships, but we're in the same boat now. That's not the reason you were there. The reason you were there was to specifically address that part of the experience that you had in Georgia, where your head got busted, not because you embraced everybody, but because you're a black man. And that is the experience that needs to be the basis of your articulation of a struggle still ongoing after 50 years of your own involvement. There is very little progress, but you're still being magnanimous, telling us on this scenic tour that it has nothing to do with your specific reasons one way or the other as to the confirmation of Senator Sessions. So, I mean, what was the point of you being there? You wasted time and you wasted an opportunity to speak in behalf of a specific community that has specific concerns. And they are primarily, and or I should say, they are in fact about race. Generally, whites are not having a problem about race. I think we could acknowledge from your own experience, African Americans, Latinos, Asians, other communities of color. That's where the problem is. They're the ones experiencing it. So why would you get up there and tell us about, you know, how the police attacked you 50 years ago? If anything, the reference of 50 years ago should be that nothing or very little has changed. And the sentiments and the experiences of 50 years ago are alive and well in Jeff Sessions today. That was your job. That was the reason you were supposed to be sitting behind that table testifying. Now let's talk about Mr. Booker. He's young and ambitious, and you just could hear it in his voice. The larger part of his testimony had to do with him. As you know, You know, you must know how important this issue is to me. Who cares about what you're thinking? You're there as a U.S. senator. You are there to carry a burden. And again, you wasted time and opportunity talking about yourself. Who needed you there? Wasting people's time. And at a critical moment when you should come out swinging, you go through this preamble centered on yourself. A long preamble. That should have been time devoted to telling the world what you know about this man. Instead, you're congratulating yourself for having the courage to go against some kind of protocol observed in the Senate that senators don't attack each other. Your job should be the hell with that. I'm not here to promote the protocol of the U.S. Senate. He wants to be congratulated for having the courage to do what he should be doing. And he devotes at least half of his time talking about himself. He did not belong there. So here we have, at a critical moment, these are the things that gall me. Somebody should have said, well, what is the strategy here for our testimony? Okay, Bill, you do this, you drive home these points. Mary, you drive home these other points, and I will take these points. So that among three people from the same group, the Congressional Black Caucus, not only would you have gotten a panoramic view of where they stand on this critical issue, but that they would have hammered home in specifics where this candidate falls short and why he is totally unacceptable to a group that represents these many people. He said 78 million people altogether, that the Congressional Black Caucus allegedly represents 17 million of them, African Americans. Did you represent properly yesterday? No. Look, if I were walking down the street and I tapped somebody, say, hey, you got a couple of minutes? Come testify. Tell them what you know. There would have been not too much of a difference. But there's no fight here. Everybody's polite. And the constant theme of being ecumenical, it bothers me. When the gay community is fighting, it's fighting for gay issues, and it's clear. When the disabled community is fighting, it's fighting for disabled people, and they're clear. We have this history of ecumenism. We want to carry everybody. And you're pleading with the system. The guy pleading for love. Wait. Is that right? You are using testimonial time at a congressional hearing, a U.S. Senate hearing, and you're talking about we need love. Is this what you expect? Is this what is to be expected from the Justice Department? Are you on some new meds? You are talking about whether this guy needs to be run out of town. and that you make it clear that this group of which you are members, that's exactly what you intend to do. You leave nothing blurry. You are specific about everything you say. And you come in with a demand. You're not begging and pleading. You come in with a demand. This really irritates me, because this is a constant pattern among Black elected officials when they are dealing with a white political system. They become servile and timid and unclear about what their job is. And that's why I'm perturbed. I feel better now. I do. But we have to keep these things in mind. It was quite insulting and quite disappointing to see these legislators who supposedly have all this clout. You have all the millions of people that you're representing, and you're still walking hat in hand, and talking about extraneous stuff that have nothing to do with the business of the moment. Quite disappointing. And I wish they'd do something about it. If you're not prepared, don't testify. And you come in talking about how miffed you are at being placed on the very last panel, just like the old days when you had to go to the back of the bus. If you look at the tone of their testimony, they continue to ride the back of the bus without anybody making them do so. Thanks for listening. We've come to the end of the program today, and I hope it kind of opened up a different way of viewing things, because we depend on these people to do the right thing, and we expect them to understand that we are looking to them to do their jobs and to do them well. This was not a good job at all. This was a total letdown. Stay tuned. Expanding Mind with Eric Davis comes next. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you think about the program. It's a pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow for Free Your Mind Friday. Bye-bye.